Capital Market Insights from ICMA.
My name is Gabriel Carlsen. I'm responsible for fintech across primary, secondary, repo and collateral markets and sustainable finance at the International Capital Market Association. And I'm pleased to introduce today's podcast on fintech and capital markets, the challenges, gains and expectations in the current pandemic. Today's podcast forms part of a series of podcasts ICMA has been recording on the topic on fintech more broadly in the context of the COVID-19 pandemic from the different perspectives of ICMA's diverse membership. And I'm delighted to be joined by Steve Toland, founder of Transfig, today for this podcast. With this background, I must ask you, Steve, to introduce yourself and tell us more about Transfig and the e-trading solutions you provide for the fixed income market.
Gabriel, thank you very much for having us on this podcast. It's not my first podcast, but it's a bit new to me, so I'm quite excited to use this medium. In terms of introductions of myself, Steve Toland, I'm one of the co-founders at Transfig. We are a fintech company operating specifically in capital markets, and specifically there, fixed income execution and trading systems. And we've been going 4 years and recently have joined the ICMA. So that's sort of the background of who I am and who we are. In terms of your sort of follow-up question of what we do, so we as a company, we provide solutions that deal with APIs. So I would call us a hosted API translation service. And not everyone knows what an API is. So an API it basically stands for Application Programming Interface. And you can think of it as basically a means and methodology for computers to exchange information. So it's how basically computers can talk to each other and they use APIs to do so. And the best analogy that I've sort of come across, or the one that I like to use, is the postal service. So if you want to send a letter either across the country or across the world, all you need to do is basically write your letter and put it inside an envelope, and you need to address it and put a stamp on it, and it just magically goes somewhere else in the world. And that's because all the different parts of the system know what to do at their stage. So the guy who picks up the letter from the local post box near us doesn't need to know whether that letter is going on a plane or a train or a truck somewhere. He just needs to get it to his local sorting office. I, as the sender, need to make sure I've got an address on there and I've got a stamp on there, etc. And if, for example, if the address is missing, then the whole system breaks down. So we've got there's a whole system in place which makes sure that letters get delivered across the world. And essentially in the electronic space with APIs, it's exactly the same thing. Basically computers are sending and receiving information, but you've got to do it in an agreed format which both sides understand. So you need things like addresses, and you need things like the letter needs to go inside the envelope and not on the outside of the envelope, or if you put it in the wrong place, it's all going to break down. And so those APIs, while they're simple in what they do, tend to be quite complex in all the different types and flavors and how they work. And you can also think of it as different postal services that you have to deal with. And so if you come back to what we do, so the business problem what we're solving is if you're trading in electronic markets in the fixed income space, there's more than, we think, 200 trading venues across bonds, swaps, futures and repos. And if you want to trade electronically with those venues, the problem is that every one has a different API. Encoding to them is time consuming and costly. So what we do at Transfig is we code to those native APIs, translate them into a normalized format, and present that to our customers as a single API. And we call that one API for e-trading, or we have also called that Google Translate for APIs. And what that enables our customers to do is actually, it makes it much, much easier to build a trading or a risk application. So if they're building either a desktop GUI to view data from different trading venues, or they want to send execution messages either via an RFQ or orders into a central limit order book, they don't have to worry about the technical complexities that all the APIs are different. They've just got to just deal with our one, and we make it much easier for them to focus on the business object messages that they deal with. And so obviously, whether they're banks or asset managers, what they want to be doing is focusing on trading and risk execution, regulatory requirements as well. And then we're trying to free them up so they don't have to worry about bits and bytes and that type of stuff. So sorry, long introduction, but hopefully that gives a background as to what we do.
That's really interesting. And I think this is also reflected in our findings at ISMA. As you know, we have published a number of directories of the various technology solutions across the spectrum, whether it's for the bond issuance, trading, collateral management operations. And there is actually a large number of different execution venues in secondary markets. It is evolving in primary markets. There's even more specific applications for collateral management operations or intraday liquidity monitoring. So it is a space with many different solutions, and the role of APIs is, of course, becoming more and more important. So I think that's very useful background. If we take a step back, you mentioned Transfic was founded 4 years ago. If you look back, what are the efficiencies that have been gained in the debt capital markets over the years with the advance of fintech?
Well, there's a lot, really. I mean, it depends how, sort of how far you go back. It is interesting that the word sort of fintech is a more sort of recent phenomenon, and obviously fintech stands for financial technology. But it is interesting that if you actually, certainly when we talk to investors, most people, when they're talking about fintech, are tend to be talking in the consumer space. So they're talking about mobile payment applications like TransferWise or new banking applications or savings applications, etc., which they're accessed through their mobile phone. And we don't do any of those. We're in the capital markets. So that's obviously this ICMA is very much a capital markets focused organization. So we don't tend to do any trading through mobile phones. But fintech has been obviously around for quite a while in the capital market space. And I would argue that most trading all used to be over the telephone and obviously has migrated to electronic trading systems over the years. So I would argue that the likes of Bloomberg and Reuters, as I still call them, Refinitiv now, essentially are fintechs in terms of the way they disseminate news and financial data. And then you've obviously got trading platforms, so, you know, the likes of TradeWeb or MarketAxess. Each of them have got sort of focuses on government bonds, corporate bonds, and obviously, you know, when dealers trade with each other on the likes of BrokerTec or MTS, those are, I would call, fintechs. They are basically enabling efficiencies to take place in the debt capital markets in regards as to how people transact. More recently, what has happened is that we've got more efficiencies have come in to the space. So one thing that happens all the time, whether you're talking about mobile phones or how you get stuff delivered to your house via Amazon, et cetera, one of the things that's enabling that efficiencies is that the cost of technology is getting much cheaper. Computing power is getting cheaper, et cetera. So what is happening in the world of fixed income or capital markets, but fixed income specifically where we focus, is that is enabling new entrants to come in because the costs of entry are lower. It used to be you had to be a Bloomberg or a Reuters type organization to be able to build these systems. It costs a lot of money to do that. But now with cloud technologies, we use open source components. So you can build modular solutions for different parts of the debt capital markets value chain and sort of plug them. And some of those can be complementary to existing vendors, but essentially what most of them do is they enable efficiencies. And so I can think of some examples such as Mosaic Smart Data is a company that we've worked with a little bit. They focus on very much the analytics space, et cetera. And they're just doing analytics. They're not trying to do everything else. And, you know, we work with a couple of companies in presenting solutions to banks and buy side. So Axe Trading is one, and Soft Solutions is another. And each of those guys is not trying to do everything. They're trying to focus on smaller parts of the value chain, as we are as well. And then a lot of that is actually enabled because of, as I said, the cost of technology is coming down and it enables new entrants to sort of come into the space. And I think that will continue to accelerate as we go forward.
Yes, I think that's very interesting. And I think just to go back to your initial comments, the distinction between fintech generally and capital markets is, of course, very important. And there are differences. You mentioned that people are not trading by their mobile phones, which is certainly not the case anymore. But it's interesting to see that actually in some countries, that's more from a retail perspective. We saw it in Kenya, more recently in the Philippines, that it has been made possible for retail investors to access bond markets, in particular government bond markets, through their mobile phones. That's, of course, a slightly different context, but interesting developments, which we are also tracking on our dedicated webpage, where you can find an overview of these applications. But I think this is really just a niche within a niche and not particularly relevant to the topic we're discussing from an institutional perspective. You also mentioned data analytics, which I think is becoming increasingly important as an enabler for fintech. We see it clearly in our traditional space, but even more so for ESG and sustainability bond markets. But looking ahead, what are the trends you are seeing? And do you see any consolidation of trading desks in terms of products and markets?
So the answer to that is yes and no. So I think the biggest trend that we see and observing is obviously we're trying to enable as well, is one of what I would call automation. A lot of trading takes place in the fixed income space, whether we're talking bonds or swaps or repos, etc., via RFQ methodology. But what is coming very much into that space is more and more automation. So bank customers of ours, rather than having a big trading desk where they receive that RFQ in, so trader is responding to each quote as it comes in, sending a price out to their customers. What banks are looking to do is actually build auto negotiation engines where they can have a machine which responds to those quotes if they're within certain parameters, et cetera, and certain liquidity types or certain customers. But if it's outside parameters or it's too big in size, maybe it will go to the manual trading desk. But banks are looking to automate those processes. And then when you look at the sort of buy side as well, they're not looking to just trade one bond. They're looking to trade a portfolio of bonds or a list of bonds. And what they want to be able to sell, they want to change the risk parameters of their portfolio. And it's not just selling just one bond in Vodafone anymore. It's like they want to say, okay, I've got a list of bonds which I want to send to different banks or maybe even down the line, different other buy sides directly. And then we need to automate that process. If you're going to be sending 20 or 50 bonds through at one time, you need different automation workflows to be able to deal with those processes. So I think those are the sort of automating those workflows so that certainly to an extent computers will deal with some of that, I think is the biggest trend taking place in capital markets at the moment. And obviously we're trying to, a lot of what we do is to build the API systems to make, whether it's a buy side or a sell side, plugging in to those different trading venues which support those workflows easier. So I see that as the sort of, and obviously, so that, back to your question, consolidation or fragmentation. So that enables, if you like, desks at trading institutions to get smaller. But then you obviously, one of the things that I've always found over time since I've been doing capital markets is you get more and more fragmentation. So partly because of technology, you get new trading venues springing up, which focus on different trading areas and have different niches and focuses in those spaces. So I can think in the capital market space, I mean, just off the top of my head, I can think of you in the US, you've got venues like Opendoor, which are just focused on the off-the-run US treasuries rather than the on-the-run. That's their niche and that's where they're focused. You've got Trumid, which has sort of come into the sort of corporate bond space in the US. And then more recently, the team who were behind Liquidity Edge in the US, which got sold and bought by Market Access, some of that team have basically launched a new trading venue, which is not live yet, but it's Ledger Edge. And that is going to be underneath the covers, is going to have some blockchain technology. So if you like new trading venues sort of springing up, focused on certain either asset classes or workflows, and they can drive further efficiencies. And it's not just with new entrants. You've even got the big players, BrokerTec. BrokerTec is launching two new venues. BrokerTec Stream is a different matching methodology for US treasuries. And they've also launched BrokerTec Quotes, which is a repo trading venue. So there's more fragmentation coming alongside some of the consolidation of how you actually trade stuff. Again, sorry, a long-winded answer, but it's like there's a lot of stuff going on.
There seems to be indeed, and this seems to be the broader picture of high touch on the one hand and low touch, the differentiation between the workflows, automation of these workflows, auto negotiation execution, and as you said, more specialization, not only of the new entrants, but also of the existing, of the incumbents. But if we take a step back and if you look at the effects of a pandemic since the beginning of the year, since March here in Europe, what is the effect from your perspective on the fintech sector, of course, from a capital markets perspective?
Well, I'd actually say it was actually twofold. Obviously, most fintechs like us are sort of startups and they're trying to build a new product or a new service. And part of that process involves raising capital, et cetera. And one thing I would say is about the pandemic, it has made that process harder. We were very fortunate that we were already well into our fundraising for our Series A round, and we actually closed it in April. but we were after lockdown, but we were already very much advanced in the sort of process. I think if we'd been much earlier in the process, and certainly with some investors, it's sort of changed risk appetite. And so I think at earlier stage fintechs, I think it's a little bit harder to raise money in the current environment. That said, in terms of what we do with our existing customers and what we do for new customers, in a way, not a lot has changed. Banks are still trading bonds, swaps and futures and repos, in fact, more so because a lot of more debt is being issued by governments, et cetera. And those banks and buy sides still have the same drivers pushing them on in terms of they need to be higher regulatory burden and they need efficiencies in how they trade. And that is compelling for them. So the underlying needs of why you need fintechs to come in and solve problems for these customers has not gone away. And certainly for us, we found that how we've engaged with customers while we're doing obviously stuff via video now, et cetera, the types of conversations we have and the problems we're looking to solve have not changed. We're very fortunate to be doing what we're doing and not running a pub or a hair salon, which she gets told by the government to shut down. So we're quite lucky in that space. What it has changed significantly is the way we work. We at Transfic primarily are a software development shop. We have to write software, which translates all these APIs into an easier format for the banks and buy side to use. And one of the ways that we go about building our software is that we were always very committed that all our developers had to be in one location and in one office so that they could all communicate well with each other. And we actually do a thing called pair programming. So we actually have two developers share a keyboard and a screen, and they actually write the code together. And they also write tests before they write the code. So all our code is being tested all the time. But of course, having people share a screen and a keyboard doesn't really work if they're all working at home. So we had to convert our working practices in terms of essentially how we went about doing that. And that took some adjustment. But we do have people now pair programming remotely, but they actually have between them when they're working on something, they have a video channel like you and I are talking right now, Gabriel, to basically talk with each other. And then they have a separate communications channel open to actually look at the code that they're working on together. And they communicate back and forth on that all day. And then what had actually made it easier is that sometimes you actually want more people to look at a problem, whether we've got business analysts or quality assurance testers as well coming in to look at the code base. And in a way, we used to have people huddle around a screen in the office, and now we have people who are all remotely in, but they can all share a screen on a desktop. In a way, as we call it, that's mob programming. That actually is more efficient. So it has been a sort of a learning, sort of a transition process for us. But as I think you guys are aware, there's a really nice blog post on our website that was written by some of the developers about how we've managed to continue to code during this pandemic working from home.
That is really interesting. I think, of course, the pandemic has had an impact on everyone. But it's really interesting to understand how you have coped with this from your perspective, and this virtual pair programming seems to be really innovative and make things more efficient, even though it is, of course, a challenge in terms of communication for many. There's flow of information between colleagues, between clients and counterparts. One point you mentioned relates to the regulatory burden that remains a key driver, of course, efficiency, but also complying with regulation. Speaking about this, what other processes of the fixed income market do you think can be improved by fintech? And what are the remaining challenges? Thinking about the regulatory framework, whether this is conducive to these changes brought on by fintech.
From a regulatory perspective, I think regulators, obviously, one of the things they want is transparency. And they obviously want fair markets. Where I think fintechs can have the biggest impact on transparency is obviously tracking asset flows. So it is actually interesting. There is some new trading venues which are coming along in Singapore, which we've done some work with, called Bond eValue, and they're using some blockchain technology to keep track of assets, et cetera. Actually, HQLA, who are doing stuff in the repo securities lending space, and obviously I did mention before Ledger Edge, they are all looking to use blockchain or distributed ledger technology in order to keep track of ownership of assets, etc. I think that drives efficiencies and also transparencies as far as a regulator is concerned. And then regulators also want to talk about consolidated tapes, etc. It's basically publishing data as quick as possible to see what's happened. Now, the big problems there is how you format data and how you publish it in efficient ways. I think a lot of the work that we're doing in terms of, we use some open source technology called Aeron, which is very good at handling vast amounts of data at very high throughputs. I mean, we're talking millions of messages per second, potentially. But you don't want to be using that stuff if you're only throwing more and more hardware at it, essentially. So we've done a load of work with Aeron, which is open source, to basically optimize that so it maintains its, if you like, high performance, but it also is quite efficient in terms of the amount of computer processing power it uses. And you say, well, that's just sort of transfer related. But the point is that Aeron is a messaging technology which is open source. So we've made some enhancements to this, and then we've given it away, or it's freely available if you go and look on GitHub. But what that enables is we need, or regulators need, in order to track markets efficiently in terms of what's happening, they need to see everything in real time. And there is just such a massive amount of data going through. You need enabling technologies so that you can actually see all that data in real time and process it. So I think that's where potentially we've got fintechs can enable regulators down the line to see more transparency in markets.
So it all comes back down to data, it seems. And that's also a topic that we are aware of, where in particular, I think data quality plays an important role for many of these applications, which in many cases seems to be insufficient. Regardless, in certain areas, there is a good level of quality. And as you said, millions of data points being captured and being processed in real time for certain applications or from a regulatory perspective to be able to keep track. I think this seems to be more prevalent in some areas like FX markets, for example, but certainly I think the direction of travel is clear as well here in fixed income markets. Now, looking ahead in the next 5 to 10 years, what is the next big shift? Do you think that AI will play a greater role? And if so, what are the implications for jobs in the financial industry from your perspective?
I don't really like the term artificial intelligence. Maybe it's because I used to really like the film 2001 and HAL kills all the guys on the spacecraft. If you think about artificial intelligence going that way, it's a pretty scary sort of concept. But what we are going to have a lot more is more machine learning, automating processes and getting computers to do repetitive tasks very quickly and very efficiently. And we're going to have more and more of that in capital markets without a doubt. And we think, I mentioned before about banks are wanting to build auto negotiation engines. Well, you could argue that's a machine learning process. I mean, obviously they set it up and the computer responds to the quotes, but what you do is you capture the data and say, well, why are we losing some of these deals? And then it's basically optimized how we price and to which customers, etc. And I think the computers enable the repetitive tasks to be done very quickly and efficiently, but you still need humans, thankfully. I think there's a role for us for a little while yet, where we've got to interpret the data and make decisions based upon it rather than leaving that to a computer. And my own view is that email, as a simple example, is meant to make everyone's life more efficient. But if actually we all drown under weights of email. So technology, whether it's machine learning or whatever, tends to enable people to transition to different types of role and job, etc. And so, yeah, you will need over time less people doing the manual tasks, but more people making the correct decision-making task on what the machine learning or AI thing is doing to say, is this thing doing the right things and should we change it? I think we're okay for a little while yet. But then obviously I'm biased in that opinion. If you ask Hal, a computer, he might have a different view.
I think that's a very interesting perspective. Talk about AI and machine learning, what it may mean in the future for jobs and some of the processes. But it seems like it's a continuation of what has actually happened in the past, where manual or repetitive processes have been taken over by machines, which then frees up people's time to focus on more efficient tasks. With this, before we reach the end of our podcast, are there any closing remarks you would like to make?
I think in what we do and how we deal with customers, I think the biggest thing is just the amount of nuances and different types of systems there are. You know, obviously we focus on fixed income. Obviously ICMA is a little bit wider in terms of capital markets, but it is unbelievable how many different trading venues there are, how many different workflows there are, how many different types of technology there are, etc. And I do think one of the most important things that everyone needs to keep doing is, just COVID aside, is keep talking with each other at conferences and sharing information as much as possible. And as obviously ICMA, one of the things it does is a medium to share information between the members. And so I think we need to try and do more of that, whether we're a fintech and trying to automate things as much as possible. But the more we sort of learn about how the different nuances of the market work, the better. So thanks for giving us the opportunity to be on the podcast today.
Yes, thank you, Steve. And hopefully in the future, we will be able to hold events again in person, not only virtual events. So hopefully this will happen in a not too distant future. This is Gabriel Carlson speaking with Steve Tolan from Transfig. Thank you very much for sharing these interesting insights.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. For more ICMA podcasts and further information on capital markets, please visit our website, icmagroup.org.